Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows what it's like to be ejected and dejected. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman.
Woo! And rejected. Every rendition of the word. We have experienced it, Jake, and the ejection of three participants in ALCS Game 5 was merely a footnote in what has been one of the craziest days of baseball in October baseball history. Jake, and we are recording this on Saturday morning because how could we not? How could we not get on these microphones and talk about two of the more exciting and ridiculous postseason games we have ever witnessed? You are still in Phoenix, Arizona, where the Phillies and Diamondbacks will square off once again at Chase Field for Game 5. This series is all tied up, but we are going to begin in Texas in the first half of this recap episode because this game was better. And the Phillies Diamondbacks game was pretty good. So that has a good sense for how good the baseball was. I can go beat by beat with this one since I know you'll probably carry the NLCS one. But before we get there, I guess a good way to set the stage here is, how did you experience this game generally? Because obviously you were probably at Chase Field for the majority of it. I know you were clearly watching and tweeting some screenshots, which was good. But I'm curious what your experience was watching this game before we get into the specifics.
So when you're covering a late game and the early game is going on during BP, it's tough to watch because you could like have your phone out with the game on, you have game day up, but they very rarely put it up on the big board. They did. So wow. During Phillies BP yesterday, for about 45 minutes, they had the game up on the big board, and that was during like the Nathaniel Lowe opposite field homer off Verlander, mm-hmm. and then the Jordan Montgomery Yordan at bat, yep. and that
so
was incredible.
Fifth and sixth,
and then everyone retreated to the press box and just watched the end of the game. It's great because there's like everyone has their computer open and everyone's watching the game at the same time.
How could you not? So okay, all right. I just wanted to understand exactly your situation there. But let's go back to the beginning. We have Montgomery against Verlander once again. And for the first few innings, I know Bregman, takes Montgomery yard in the first, but otherwise, both of them looked great. I mean, honestly, there really was not a whole, like Montgomery, again, the command was right there. The velo was up. Verlander looked probably better than he did in the first start.
I would give Jordan Montgomery way too much money if I was a general manager. I am thankful that I'm not a general manager because I would do something stupid. Him right now. The recency bias of Jordan Montgomery being a big boy would make me do irrational things with owner's money.
His agent, whoever that is, has to be enjoying what this experience has been. So we're rolling. Again, Astros are up 1-0, but Montgomery is not rattled by it. I mean, it was one pitch that Bregman crushed, and we're moving. We're going all the way we could pretty much go to top five. So again, he's striking out Yordan. He's striking out Abreu in the fourth. We're going 1-2-3 for Verlander. No trouble whatsoever. We go to the top of the fifth. And the top of the fifth is where we start to have some defensive issues in the expensive Rangers middle infield. Tucker leads off with a single. McCormick flies out. And then on a tailor-made double play, Marcus Semien just straight up drops the ball on the transfer. And not even on the transfer. He just drops the ball even before the transfer. So now you have first and second with one out. Maldonado flies out, and it's first and third with Jose Altuve up, and it's 1-0. And Jose Altuve bunts for some reason. What was your takeaway with this, I guess, surprise bunt attack from the hottest hitter in Globe Life Field history?
Jose Altuve thinks it's still 2014, and he's just trying to make the club.
He had flashbacks to the 2011 College World Series.
He's trying to be like the guy who can do a lot for a ball club.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But he's like, now I got to prove my worth. I'm like the scrappy guy. Like I'm the 26th man on the roster. Yeah. Like, look, I can bunt in a big spot.
Jose, my guy, you're one of the greatest postseason hitters of all time. Swing the bat. Swing.
Good news. So he remembered that later on. But it was first pitch curveball. And he tried to bunt a curveball, and that was really the problem. Like, I guess in terms of the element of surprise, like, yeah, I would be surprised too. The problem was it just wasn't a very good bunt.
It was a bad surprise.
Yeah. Bad surprise. Two outs.
Bad surprise. Hashtag.
We're very confused.
Bad surprise. Like, it was a bad surprise party. It was like, I know it's my birthday, but like, I don't want this.
I'm not the kind of person that likes surprise parties. So, and like, you knew that. So like, why would you organize this? Why would you? And also like
the Rangers loved it. It was the greatest surprise party ever. Oh, Jose Altuve's bunting with two guys on and two outs. Sure.
Well, here's the other thing about this. It's like, clearly Altuve did this on his own for some reason, right? It's not like Dusty's calling for the bunt in this spot. I mean, please, like, you know, Dusty, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if he was asked about this after the game, because clearly nobody else is going to, no one remembers this bunt at this point, obviously. But as we recap this game, we have to point it out.
Jeff Bagwell actually called it from the...
Oh, that's true. He is in charge.
From the GM suite.
He's in charge. No, he's... Oh, right. That's true. He's not sitting right behind home in Arlington the way he does in Houston. Anyway, bottom five. Nathaniel Lowe smokes an opposite field home run off Verlander to make it 1-1. Love to see that swing from Nathaniel, who, as a couple people have pointed out, has ditched the turtleneck this postseason, which is an interesting move. I'm not sure exactly how long he's gone turtlenecklessless, but I know he was scuffling, you know, certainly in the second half, and maybe that's what made him switch it up, and now he's a great swing there. Makes it 1-1. So just keeping an eye on those turtleneck, non-turtleneck splits.
Hate that he ditched the turtleneck. He had a distinct aesthetic, and he should have committed to it.
It's true. Alec Bohm is kind of holding it down, right? He's still rocking. Although, is he probably not in Arizona?
He does the turtleneck at home, yeah, and then the deep V on the road.
Deep V. Okay. I love those adjustments. All right. We go to top six. Dubon strikes out. Bregman walks. And now we have the at-bat you just referred to earlier. Montgomery versus Alvarez. And this was just, I mean, Alvarez ends up, you know, lining 109 for a single. But again, Montgomery was basically executing every possible pitch you could ask him to, all the way until the eighth pitch, when he delivers the sinker down and in, and Yordan at this point has just seen it enough times. He's like, okay, I figured it out.
It was the scene of Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Listen, Jordan, you're doing your thing, man. You are following directions, and sometimes Yordan Alvarez tells you that he doesn't care. Now it is first and third, and Jose Abreu is up. Jose Abreu has already delivered so many big swings this postseason, and Abreu smokes one. The ball, again, Montgomery is executing. You look at the three straight curveballs below the zone, exactly what he's supposed to do. At least the game cast. It didn't look as good because Abreu, we talked about this with the Alvarez against Chapman, he gets out in front of it enough. Like, he is, the bat head comes in front of the zone. So if you look at the game day where it says the ball is going to be, it looks lower than it actually was.
It's not about how low it is. It's about in and out. Like, that, the first two curveballs he threw to Abreu were further in under the barrel. And that one was kind of more middle, and that allowed Abreu to catch it in a more advantageous spot. So, yes, like, it looked like a good enough pitch, but in an 0-2 count, like, that's got to be in on the back foot. And it
was. Agreed. Now, Abreu hits it directly to Corey Seager. Now, it's 96 miles an hour off the bat. I mean, they ruled this a hit.
It's an error.
It's an error, right? I mean, it was directly to Seager. I mean, not an easy play, but I would say it was clearly an error. They rule it a hit. But either way, who cares what it's ruled, because it's 2-1 Astros. And it's like, after we just watched Semien drop the ball, now we watch Seager boot one. And it's like, this is a defensive disaster.
It's a tough play. But if you're a gold glove finalist shortstop making over $300 million, it is a play that you are expected to make.
Yeah.
He was caught flat footed. That's a ball that you should go get. Mm-hmm. Right. And it just ate him up.
That's the definition of eating him up. Oh, man. Yeah.
And it was hit, what, like 96? I mean, that's a hard hit ball, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't like 110.
But it was, I think it was more about the amount of topspin because of the way Abreu hit it that made it such a difficult play. But again, like, Seager's been clean, though, in the field. Like, if anything, like, maybe he's not making the highlight reel plays, but he's not fucking up. But this, in this spot, obviously felt like a pretty big fuck up. There was a lot more game to go. But in that moment, especially you still have Tucker coming up and Montgomery clearly starting to tire as he's being hit hard in this inning. And then he walks Tucker and you're like, oh boy, it's all kind of falling apart here.
This is, I'll use this opportunity. Just Semien and Seager early in games have looked horrible at the plate. They have been under four-seam fastballs all series. First inning of this game, they let off with two pop-ups, just getting under that four-seam fastball from Verlander. They have looked a little out of sorts. It is difficult to blame these two considering what they have done for this team all season long. However, in this series, they have simultaneously underwhelmed, and there's no way around that.
Yep. Spores comes in, gets McCormick to line out, and then we got to say, Semien makes an unbelievable play on Pena to save a run and end the inning and keep it at 2-1. We go to the bottom of the sixth. Semien pops out to lead the inning. Seager doubles. Rocket double to right. Evan Carter singles to left. And now it's time. It's time for El Bombi to bring the house down. Justin Verlander, who had been so solid throughout this game and clearly was in control. And even in his first game against them, you know, he didn't have his best stuff. He wasn't perfect, and yet he was always limiting the damage. But as we've seen in other postseason contexts this month, it's all about the ambush. And Adolis Garcia takes a first pitch fastball on the inner half and hits it to the moon.
Not a bad pitch. Not a bad pitch. It was on the black on the inside half. It was just your prototypical strong hitter sit fastball, get fastball, swing hard, home run.
Elevate, celebrate. This was, now he had a home run like this against the Orioles, but it didn't feel quite, you know, again, earlier in the series, whatever. This was like everything you could possibly hope for from a postseason home run. I mean, this could have gone down, sorry, Rangers fans, could have gone down as a truly legendary postseason moment in this franchise history, and still does in some respects.
Put it in the bin with the Josh Hamilton game six home run in the top of extra innings.
Or the Nelson Cruz one. The Rangers have had their fair share of these, right? Okay, so anyway.
But this was he blasts it and it's incredible. Oh. And Dak Prescott's losing his mind. And George and Laura Bush are there. Yes. Right. It's a heck of a squad. I saw some tweets about Adolis being like, man, he barely got that out. It's crazy he pimped it that hard. Man knew.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you know, you man know. Knew. I will say when that ball was in the air a long time. I love when home runs have enough hang time that the fielder has enough time to get to the fence and look up and still watch it. Like, they're at the fence to the point, but the ball's still in the air, and you're wondering, is this actually going to come down? And then, no such luck for the Astros left fielder, Chaz McCormick, as that ball sails over his head. Pandemonium ensues at Globe Life Field. Adolis takes his time rounding the bases, as he should, and the Rangers lead 4-2.
And the Rangers hang on to that 4-2 lead, closing it out. Yeah. Great innings from Josh Spores, Aroldis Chapman, and Jose Leclerc to finish it. And they head back to Houston.
Oh, no, Jake, sorry. That's not what I know you were at the D-backs Phillies game. That's actually not what happened.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there was other stuff that happened after that. So Tavares pops out. Young singles. Here comes Hector Neris. Hector, the protector, protects it from getting worse, I should say.
Protects the deficit.
Yes, we go to the top of the seventh, which I am deeming the Marvin Hudson legacy inning. Home plate umpire Marvin Hudson was about to make his presence known. Martin Maldonado strolls to the plate to lead off the inning and draws a walk, very much helped by the fact that a ball that was very clearly in the strike zone was called a ball. He ends up drawing the walk. Jose Altuve lines one to left. Evan Carter makes a sensational play. So that was not a home run from Jose Altuve. Not yet, anyway. Dubon strikes out. Bregman, a makeup call. Marvin Hudson, again, amazing work. Calls strike three on Bregman on a pitch a few inches outside. Josh Spores gets out of it. He's amped. So, again, Marvin Hudson, he dominated that inning. He delivered the drama of them walking Martin Maldonado again, but then sat down Alex Bregman, even though he didn't actually strike out. It was just, again, Marvin Hudson, you really did a great job there. Bottom seven, nothing really happens, except that Marcus Semien and Corey Seager ground out again, which, again, at this point, we need to add runs here. We need to have a little bit more run support. That was not happening with the top of the Rangers order. And here comes Aroldis Chapman once again. And I got to say, Jake, You look pretty good. I know the command was still a little shaky, but he was throwing harder than he had, I think, all postseason. He strikes out Yordan. He gets Abreu to fly out, but Tucker smashes a fastball down the left field line for a double. And for the third time in the last four games, I think, Jose Leclerc has to come in the eighth.
And Leclerc gets out of the eighth inning. Okay. He gets out of the eighth inning, but this is a theme in every postseason. When you ask your players, specifically your relievers, to do more than they have done all season long, that is a compounding amount of exhaustion. It is a law of diminishing returns. The more you ask, the more tenuous the results will be. And that brings us, I guess not quite yet.
No,
let's talk about
quite.
The bottom of the eighth.
You certainly can't skip the bottom of the eighth. So the bottom of the eighth, again, at this point, it is still 4-2. And here comes Brian Abreu, who had just allowed his first run in like 3 months the night before, again, even in an Astros victory. But here comes Brian Abreu again, one of the best relievers on earth. And he walks Evan Carter. And the command is already not looking awesome. He, you know, he doesn't get a call on the on ball four, maybe was in the strike zone, okay, whatever. But he walks Evan Carter. And it's like, okay, here we go. Adolis Garcia is coming up again. Is he going to make this even worse for the Astros? And instead, in some backwards way, he somehow makes it better, I guess. Brian Abreu tries to go up and in and just absolutely nails Adolis with 99 to the elbow.
Madness ensues. Bench is clear. Adolis, after getting hit, turns around and squares up facing Martin Maldonado. It gets chaotic. People are yelling. There are ejections. Dusty's booted. Abreu's booted and Garcia's booted. I want to just quickly say this. Don't think it was intentional at all. I don't think in a postseason game in that spot with the score that close that Abreu is trying to hit Garcia. I think he was trying to go inside on him to make him uncomfortable, which is rational considering earlier in the game against Verlander, Garcia took an inside fastball that he was sitting on and hit it out. That is how you make sure hitters don't do that.
Go a little
going
bit
inside,
more
there's
inside.
No problem. A little bit more inside. However, I am sympathetic to Garcia's perspective. Mm-hmm. You get hit, you think it's on purpose when it's 100 in your grill after you just pimped the shit out of a home run. And in that moment, I don't think that Garcia is considering the entirety of the situation, which is so understandable. He's in the moment. It hurts. He's frustrated. He and Maldonado clearly don't like each other and don't trust each other. And so besides that he got ejected, and that was notable because it was a plot point in this game, I don't have a huge issue with Garcia finding it to be intentional, even though I think if you asked him right now, he would say it was an accident.
Yeah, and we also need to, I think this happens a lot with these situations because we've seen so many versions of them again. As you just mentioned, it's got to really hurt. And we have to decouple the immediate feeling of getting drilled with 99 versus like rationally considering the situation. Which is why after
imagine getting punched as hard as you as someone possibly can in your arm, and then immediately they're like, "I want you to think about all of this rationally."
That's not how it works, right? It's a lot scarier in this situation. So I'm not blaming Adolis Garcia for being pissed. At the same time, yeah, it's just like, and this is why I have less reason for like Aroldis Chapman after the game and some Rangers being like, "Yeah, clearly on purpose. Like that's what it looks like." Blah blah blah. All the Astros being like, "That is the dumbest thing ever. Why would we do that?" All the Astros, honestly, admittedly, saying the right thing, saying like, "Yeah, he just had the biggest homer of his life. We have no problem with anybody celebrating. Like that's of course, like duh 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 duh." Yeah. Now easier for them to say because they ended up winning. That's fine. Maybe it's a little bit different. They're a little bit more butthurt if they ended up losing. That's all this stupid baseball logic that we're constantly trying to figure out, right? But in general, it makes no sense. Why? Not only would you give a free runner, why would you risk suspension for your arguably best reliever, one of your top two relievers at this point in the series, at this point in the game, let alone have him leave the game, get ejected in the middle of the game when you haven't even recorded an out yet, and Ryan Pressly has not warmed up. Like, none of that makes any sense whatsoever, and is also a reason to spin it forward to the rest of this game, why the Rangers need to then take advantage, whether it's intentional or not. You just got a free base runner in a huge spot to be able to tack on insurance runs, and they didn't end up doing anything with it. But go ahead.
The funniest part of the entire kerfuffle was Dusty Baker sitting on the Astros dugout bench like a petulant child. And that, I mean, in a good way. I know that's kind of a backwards thing to say. Sitting on the dugout bench, refusing to leave, refusing to budge, incredulous that his pitcher and he had both been ejected for this entire thing. He was like sitting there in a huff. It was like Jennifer Hudson, and I'm telling you, I'm not going. You can't move me. And he had super glued his ass to that spot in the dugout. And then his coaches came up and were like, yeah, Dusty, we can't start until you go. You got to go, man.
And so, first of all, Dusty was like, yeah, like I haven't been that pissed in a long time. Dusty's not someone that gets ejected. I believe he only been ejected once all season.
He has like the fewest ejection. He has the lowest ejection rate for managers with over a certain level of games managed. Like he does not get tossed.
It's not his thing, right? And so he's pissed because not only is he getting to be pissed anytime he gets ejected, but the context is so ridiculous. The fact that he can't then manage the rest of this game in this spot, in this situation, is obviously frustrating. Now, I will say, I am sympathetic to Bochy afterwards being like, what the hell took so long? Like that, this was a ridiculous delay. Like, I do agree with that. And that's really on the umpires for sure. And, you know, people, speculating, okay, Dusty's stalling to let Presley warm up longer. Like, Presley, you get as long as you need to warm up if somebody gets ejected. Like, that's a rule, I'm pretty sure. So he was going to get his time anyway. But I am sympathetic to Bochy being like, whether he thinks it was intentional or whatever, like, I do agree that the whole situation took way too long. And maybe some of that was Dusty, you know, and maybe that is Dusty more gamesmanship. I don't know. But I also totally understand if it's just Dusty being super pissed because why the hell is he being ejected? Why the hell is Ray being ejected? Blah, 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 blah. But anyway, now it's first and second. The Rangers are still up 4-2. And we have Leody Taveras coming up. And Ryan Presley having to come into the eighth inning for only the second time all season to try and get 6 outs. Leody Taveras grounds one to first base. Ridiculous play. Probably the best defensive play I've ever seen Jose Abreu make, where he stops the ball, throws it to second for the first out. Now it is first and third. Josh Jung strikes out swinging. Nathaniel Lowe strikes out looking. This is a good, I mean, obviously we can talk about this when they finish the game here. Ryan Presley is unbelievable. Ryan Presley is, I think, flawless. He's still flawless in save opportunities in the postseason in like 16 tries, which is just an absurd stat when you consider that even the best, like, think about all the best. Again, you know, we're going to get to Kimbrel later, but like, even the best guys are, we'll see it with Leclerc here in a second. Like, even the guys who are rolling, it's going to happen to you because that's just the nature of relievers. The fact that Presley hasn't been beaten once is absurd, especially in this spot. So Presley strikes out Jung, strikes out Lowe. Now we go to the top of the ninth. And here's where shit really gets interesting. Because before we get to Mr. Altuve, we have to talk about the two plate appearances before. Yiner Diaz pinch hits for Jeremy Peña. This is important. He does not pinch hit for Martin Maldonado. That happens next. He pinch hits for Jeremy Peña. And Yiner Diaz, who's been an excellent hitter all season long for the Astros, has not quite shown up for them thus far in the playoffs in the opportunities he has gotten to pinch hit or come in. But he lines one to left, single, boom, fourth pitch. And Leclerc, again, it's like, oh, he's been sitting on the bench for, you know, 25 minutes or whatever. And here comes John Singleton. I mean, this is John Singleton making his postseason debut. I don't have enough time. The John Singleton story is its own podcast. But all you need to know is that this dude was on the 2014 Astros with Jose Altuve and Carlos Corporan, okay? This guy comes up with the Astros. He's an amazing prospect. He flames out of baseball entirely. He makes it back miraculously to the big leagues this season for the first time in 8 years with Milwaukee, and then finds his way back to Houston onto the postseason roster for essentially this exact situation. And he manages to draw a walk. I believe he led minor league baseball in walks last season. And so if you're wondering, oh, was he just up there like scared to swing? Like, no, he worked it, because these were not easy pitches to lay off when you consider how good Leclerc has been and where he was locating them. But he does it. John Singleton draws a freaking walk.
Carlos Cor Perron.
Go back and look at that 2014 Astros team, because that's like a 93 loss team. It's not the 105, 106, but it's still a bad baseball team. And you'll see, I'm skipping ahead here. After Altuve comes back in the dugout, he and Singleton have a moment. And it's just like, that is just the coolest shit in the world, man. Because literally, they're the only two guys that are, I guess, still here. I mean, Singleton's been a lot of places since then, but...
Jose Altuve. Jose Altuve. Say whatever you want about the man. Who knows how much he really cheated? Who knows how culpable he is? That's not...
We sort of know how much he cheated, and it wasn't very much. But either way, he was on the team and they cheated. That's the thing that happened.
There are things we know and things we don't. I'll say mm-hmm. that. However, holy shit. What a thing. Yes. He is remarkable. He's incredible that he even became a big leaguer. Okay? This 5'7 dude from Venezuela who was told to leave the workout, irrationally believing in himself, made the big leagues at all is incredible. And that he is going to go down as maybe the best postseason hitter ever is a testament to him. He did not homer yesterday or earlier last year because of the trash can stuff. You can hate him for that. That's fine if you are a neutral fan. But you, by God, you got to respect this guy because he is such a force. He takes... A low and in Jose Leclerc changeup. Not a great pitch, not a horrible pitch. I know Leclerc's trade is pretty good. Any right on right changeup, this is the problem. Because all you got to do as a hitter is drop the bat head. All you got to do, which is always funny. All you got to do is drop the bat head. Altuve does that. 3-run bomb. Astros up. Oh. Silence at Globe Life. Globe death.
And it was, it barely got out. I thought Evan Carter had a chance at it. He was right there. It's not like Altuve has, you know, I mean, some of his homers have, you know, gone far beyond the fence, but that doesn't matter. Him, Bregman's the same way. They just know how to hit the ball over the fence when it needs to go over the fence. It's kind of that simple. Yordan can do the ones that blow our minds from a distance standpoint, an exit velocity standpoint, but ultimately, you just have to be a freak of a hitter. And that is what Jose Altuve has always been and clearly still is. He is a living legend. He has 26 postseason home runs. He will pass Manny Ramirez someday. Guaranteed. Guaranteed he will do that. And yeah, he is remarkable. And I have no, he's one of the most amazing players I've ever seen. Very simply. And the fact that, again, we're still saying that and that he's still apparently at or near the peak of his powers is just tremendous and so, so, so cool. So Altuve hits a home run. Of course he does. Go to the bottom of the ninth. And this was one of my favorite moments of the entire postseason. Because as I said earlier, Jeremy Peña is out of the game. Who's in the game? Gray Kessinger. Who the fuck is Gray Kessinger? Why the fuck is Gray Kessinger on the roster? I'm honestly still wondering that, or still was wondering that until three batters into this inning. I, at this point, still don't even realize that Gray Kessinger's in the game. He had pinch run for Singleton. But because Altuve homered, it's not like we saw him run the bases, really, right? So I haven't processed that Jeremy Peña is out of the game yet at all. Garver,
there's a line, first and second, nobody out. And there's a line drive to short, and it's like a white guy catches it.
Just like, and you're like, holy shit, Peña, wait, what?
You're like, Gray Kessinger from the rafters out of nowhere.
Like, that had to be a like all-time speed run of people Googling Gray Kessinger when he made that catch, right? Because
a lot of people typing in G-R-A-Y, even though it's G-R-A-E.
Oh. Yes. And like, the long and short of it is Gray Kessinger was like a second round pick. He was a good SEC shortstop. And that's the key here. He's just a really good infield defender that has played multiple. At no point has he really hit very well ever. But I suppose he's on the roster as the they put him on basically for Jake Myers. That was kind of the swap in terms of the bench guy that they had rolled with. I mean, Kessinger's been on the whole time, but they decided to take Myers off because I think they trusted Kessinger as the guy to, I guess, play infield defense in an absurd situation like this where Jeremy Pena is out of the game. And here we go. He makes this unbelievable play on Marcus Semien. Corey Seager smashes one to center. Dubon tracks it down. Both of those balls had like an expected batting average over 700. And then Ryan Pressly, going back to the familiar curveball, gets Evan Carter, the child, to strike out swinging, and the Astros win. Once again, to complete their undefeated run through Globe Life Field during the series. And the Rangers are going to really have to hope that if I was them, I would give the 2019 Nationals a call and say, hey, what you got? Because this is what happened to us. And so how are we going to get this done?
Howie Kendrick works for the Phillies now. He's here in Phoenix. So if the Rangers need him, he's available.
Yeah. There's Steven Strasburg. Doesn't have a lot going on right now. So maybe you could give him a call. I'm not saying he should pitch. I'm just saying, you know, he's around to maybe lend some advice. So this series,
because that's Steven Strasburg. That's Steven Strasburg, a man of many words.
Oh yeah, he loves to talk. Astros win. They're up 3-2.
Houston. Duh. Like just fucking duh. Like yeah. I'm not saying that in a salty way. I'm saying that I'm just in awe at this operation. The front office is not what it used to be. In a lot of ways, the Astros are cycling back to the past behind the scenes, but it doesn't matter because the juggernaut in that clubhouse rolls on.
And Jose Altuve is still on the Astros.
Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman are still on the Astros. And that's it. It's that simple, right? Yep. And they have enough incredible players and enough self-belief to make it work. I've thought a lot about the idea, and we'll talk about this with the Phillies and Craig Kimbrel, of irrational self-belief and irrational confidence, and how so many baseball players, when after you fail, you have to trick yourself into believing in yourself, right? And the Astros don't have to trick themselves now. They don't. They haven't had to for some time. They have confidence because it is based in something, right? And that is unique. And that is why success begets success. Correct.
And that is a terrifying thing when your baseball players are also that good. Now, Rangers go back to Houston. And it's not just that they go back to Houston where they apparently play better. It will be Nathan Eovaldi against Framber Valdez. And this is a huge advantage for Texas. Because Framber looked like doo-doo and Eovaldi was the opposite. So, again, obviously, season on the line. If they do manage to win that game, who the fuck is pitching game 7? I have no idea. But again, you gotta extend your season. And I think Nasty Nate gives them a great chance to do that. Last thing on this, I really hope there's no suspensions. Oh my God, that would be so terrible. I hope the league is smart enough to recognize neither side, please. And both teams kind of, I think Altuve basically said this, like, this does not need to extend further. This is a great series. This is stupid. So that would really be a horrible situation if they suspend anybody.
And you could tell when Garcia was hot, Yordan, fellow Cuban, clearly buddies, pulling him to the side and being like, you do not want this to get worse, right?
Right.
And like, I give Yordan a lot of credit.
100%.
In that spot. That was like, I love when that happens with players on the other team during a scuffle who are friends. Like, you see the relationships. You see real relationships in those moments.
Yeah.
And not fake competitiveness. Mm-hmm. And for Yordan to see the bigger picture there, I thought was very cool.
Yeah. But hey, Rangers, like I just said, you're still in it. I don't know what the hell just happened, but I'm also not surprised. And if the Astros struggles at home continue, you have a chance. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, it is time to talk about NLCS Game 4, which was not as good, but it was better than most postseason games. And we will talk about that in a second.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a quick housekeeping note about our merch. Look, in Australia, we love clothes and almost always wear them. If you're like us and also enjoy dabbling in clothes wearing, then why not consider some official Baseball Barbercast merchandise? Whether it's a jumper you're after, which you would call a sweatshirt, a cap, which we would call an old hair hugger, or a shirt, which we would call a belly wrap, we have it all for you. But that's not all. Do you also like to drink water or caffeinated beverages? Well, that's great because we have mugs and bottles to help you quench your thirst too. To buy any of this merch, go to podswag.com/baseball. The link is in the description of the podcast. And don't leave yourself clothesless this.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. I am in the desert. Desert is spelled with one S. Dessert is spelled with two S's. My first grade teacher taught me this distinction. You want more dessert. You want less desert. And that is how the Philadelphia Phillies feel this morning on Saturday as they came to Arizona feeling good, riding a 2-0 lead in this series. And then the snakes, the cardiac backs. Whew. Punch back, win game three, and then steal game four yesterday to even up the series. Diamondbacks 6, Phillies 5. What a weird one. Let's start at the beginning.
Please.
Bullpen games. Bullpen games suck. Bullpen games absolutely suck. They are effective for Arizona in this context. It was the only move they could do. For the Phillies in this context, it was not, and we'll get to that. But for Arizona, this was the card they had to play, and they played it. We need to find a way, as a sport, MLB needs to find a way to limit bullpen games. They are not entertaining. They are a slog. I understand that seeing each individual character coming from the bullpen, there is some interest to that. I'm not trying to sound like salty or anything or ungrateful, but it is a less entertaining product when there is a new pitcher every inning and you are changing out that pitcher like five times in the first five innings. It is not interesting. And the beginning of this game, from an entertainment perspective, suffered from that.
Yeah, no, I mean, no disputing that. And I think managers, like, I don't think managers enjoy it either. It's more work for them. It's more pressure for them. Like, it's on the front offices and the teams to be developing starting pitching to, because that's the thing. This is not about, oh, starters aren't going long into games. This is about, we don't have starters at all. Like, we don't have any starting pitching to go four or five innings that we trust, right? Like, that is, which is, I guess, sort of all part of the same problem. But, like, again, this is where the D-backs being an 84-win team kind of shows up in a more real way. Right. Because the reality is, as we've seen, they can win without Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly in this series. Right. But like they made it through a lot of the season with two good starters and that's it. And so once they get here, you kind of know you're heading towards this. Now, credit to the guys for stepping up. And that is Torrey Lovello's only play. The Phillies is a little bit of a different calculus. So but I totally agree with you. I don't enjoy watching it either. But it's a part of a much bigger problem and a slightly different problem than how far guys can go into games.
Correct. And multiple things could be true. What the Diamondbacks bullpen did yesterday was very impressive. And Lovello handling it and doing his best to guide those guys through it.
It wasn't perfect. There were some bumps along the way.
Yeah. There were some bumps, but it was pretty good. And that deserves credit. But again, I just don't find it that watchable. The Phillies went with Christopher Sanchez. Young left-hander, really good changeup. Selecting him over Taijuan Walker, who they gave $72 million to, and Michael Lorenzen, who threw a no-hitter for them and was their big deadline acquisition and then sucked after the no-hitter. That was a really interesting choice and a bit of a zag. I think everyone expected it to be Walker because Walker really can't come out of the pen, whereas Sanchez, people felt more comfortable with him coming out of the bullpen. And that choice ends up being the downfall here for the Phillies. And we'll get to why at the end, but it kind of truncates everything at the front end of this ball game and pushes every high-lev reliever they have into an earlier spot. In an ideal world, they did not want to use Kimbrel yesterday. The Phillies were doing everything they could to avoid it.
Or Alvarado.
However, they needed to. And that was the big blow. Go ahead and then we'll get to the beat by beat.
I was going to say, before we start running through and we can skip through the good chunk of the first part, but it's also that Arizona had kind of the advantage in this sense. They had already won two games this postseason using six pitchers to close out the Dodgers, using seven pitchers to beat Corbin Burns. Like, they're a little bit more familiar with the rhythm. The Phillies have had the luxury of having incredible starting pitching in basically every outing until, you know, this point. Even the game they lost in game three, right? Like, they haven't had to think about covering this many innings at any point. That is a luxury. That is a credit to the guys that they have and a reason why they are still in a good position moving forward in this series. But that impacted a lot of things about this, both the decisions, both how well Thompson was able to literally manage it as the game went on. It just made it much more difficult. And so while Sanchez was a pretty good starting pitcher, he hadn't pitched in multiple weeks. That would have been true of Walker or Lorenzen as well. So none of them were great options, although you would think that one of them would be a better option for multiple innings than eight Diamondbacks pitchers, except apparently not.
But that's just what a game four starter is. Right? That is what a game four starter is and will always be. Exactly. Let's start at the beginning. Trey Turner gets on base in the first inning with a single off of Joe Mantiply and is finally caught stealing. The end of an incredible streak. Let's pay homage.
40 consecutive stolen bases without getting caught, dating back to, I believe, August of 2022. This is the third longest streak in baseball history. Now, I was looking forward to like Moreno throwing him out. That is not what happened. I mean, Mantiply just straight picked him and got him running. And the other funny thing is the last caught stealing, I tweeted this video, the last caught stealing before this, he basically popped off the base. So like he really hasn't been thrown out by a catcher in like 53 or 4 attempts. So that streak, I guess, lives on.
The Snakes go up 1-0 in the second inning. After a very bizarre play where runner on first, one out, chopper back to Sanchez on the mound, and he, instead of swiveling to second and turning a double play, he jogs over to first base and underhand flips it to Harper. As Bryson Stott is waving his arms wildly at second, Sanchez forgot how many outs there were. Next batter, Emmanuel Rivera, single. Snakes go up 1-0. Just a total doofy play. That runner, I believe, got on base on a Bohm error.
Yes.
And so they scored a run without really doing much.
Right. And also, that was probably part of why Sanchez was a little confused, because he got a ground ball and then he struck out Tommy Pham. And in his head, it's like, I have two outs. Like, no, you don't.
You got to check that. The Snakes add another run an inning later, Gabriel Moreno. And it's like, okay, 2-0. D-backs have the momentum. The Phillies look flat and they look tired and lethargic and sloggy. And then Kyle Schwarber, full count, breaks his bat, grabs a new one. First swing off of Kyle Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Kyle Nelson, yep.
Home run. The Phillies have obliterated mistakes all postseason. When they get a mistake, they do not miss it. Brandon Pfaadt, yesterday in game three, game planned around that and did not really make many mistakes. And so he was very good. The Phillies will get you when you make mistakes. And that was a Schwarber one. Fastball, middle up, home run. So yeah, he turns to the dugout, gives them now we go, let's go. And that was a real jolt for the Phillies, who then score four more runs unanswered to go up 5-2. There's a Brandon Marsh left on left double in the gap to score a run. Really impressive swing from him. That was actually not a mistake off of Saul Frank. Good pitch, low and in on Marsh, and Marsh just inside outed it to the gap to tie up the score. And that brings us to the fifth inning, right? Was where we had our bizarre bases loaded situation.
Yes. Okay. The sixth inning. Yes. So again, Saul Frank had come in, gave up the double to Marsh, and Saul Frank, again, who had basically been unscored upon until earlier in the series as a big leaguer. Strom comes in, 1-2-3 in the fifth. And then top six, we send Saul Frank back out for Schwarber, Turner, Harper.
Right. And he walks all three of them.
But we have to pause here for one of the goofiest moments of the game. He walks Kyle Schwarber, and then facing Trey Turner, he bounces a ball that gets stuck in Gabby Moreno's chest protector. Did you know, Jake Mintz, that you get a base if the ball gets stuck in the catcher's equipment? Because I did not. Have you seen this happen before?
Lodged. If it gets lodged.
Lodged. It was lodged. It sure was. It was the lodging was great for the baseball. It snuggled inside next to Gabby Moreno's tummy. This was a bizarre play. Moreno had no idea where the ball was. So why do you think, like, do you agree with this rule? Because it doesn't, like, I'm trying to understand why we're punishing the catcher for this.
I think it's like a hidden ball trick protection.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. So it's like, I mean, I would still argue it should just be a dead ball, but I understand that that actually makes the most sense of anything I've heard as to why the base runner should be rewarded.
Yeah, like I do this with all my little leaguers all the time. Where's the ball? Go get it. Oh, you pull it out. Oh, you're out. Nanana boo boo.
I guess you're preventing against the situation where Moreno knows it's stuck in his protector and Schwarber takes off. He pulls it out, throws him out. That's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, but it would be fucking sick, though.
It would be fucking sweet. Like, I kind of feel like if you could pull that off, like, you know. Anyway,
you get rewarded super for bizarre it. Play. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It ended up not mattering.
Yeah.
Turner walks, bases loaded, no outs. And it's like, okay, Phillies, this is it. Like, you got to score a lot of runs here. Alec Bohm, first pitch against Ryan Thompson, the side armor for the Diamondbacks. Bohm chops one to third base. Manuel Rivera fields the ball right on the line, takes him into foul territory. He fires home for the force out. Bounces the throw, eats Moreno up, similar to the Seager play, to be honest with you. Ball skips away. Turner scampers home. 4-2 Phillies. Bohm is thrown out trying to run to second for no reason. That was important because the Phillies would not score again in that inning. They do score an inning later. Johan Rojas triple down the line in right field. Sac fly from Turner. That makes it 5-2. And it's like, okay, Phillies bullpen has been pretty good, but they have a lot of innings to cover here. And in the seventh, we start to see a little bit of vulnerability. Gregory Soto starts the inning, can't find the zone.
Yeah. Well, so Seranthony starts the inning.
Oh,
Seranthony, gets out,
right.
Gets Rivera. And Seranthony looked good. I know he got some nice calls there along the way. And again, the umpiring had some moments. But, you know, in general, Seranthony looked way better. Like, his shit was crazy good in his outing. But they bring in Soto to, you know, again, they don't want to push Seranthony too far. Perdomo single, Marte walk. Corbin Carroll, who has not done anything and it still hasn't done anything really in this series, grounds in to a force out. Trey Turner makes a spectacular play to get Marte out at second. And now it is first and third with two outs. And we're going back to Orion Kerkring. Now, as you mentioned, we had three innings to cover here, right? We had three innings to cover. We had already used Sanchez, Hoffman, Strom, Dominguez. And I guess now Soto has run his course here. And we don't want Gabriel Moreno to face a left-hander, which makes sense. So we're going to Kerkring. Because at this point, yeah, there's no other, you're not going to go to Kimbrel here. So you're going to go to Kerkring. You want to show faith in your rookie who had given up three hits for the first time all season the night before. And Kerkring with his slider that moves, sweeper, whatever, moves like almost no other pitch in baseball, is moving too much. It's moving too much. The day before, it was not moving enough. And in this game, it was moving too much.
He just didn't have it. Walks Moreno, mound visit, walks Christian Walker, fittingly, with the bases loaded to make the score 5-3. Jordan, I went back and looked through game logs. Orion Kerkering had not pitched with the bases loaded in over a year. And the pressure of that is a different thing, even especially in the postseason. I mean, you can talk about how the difference in environment for a guy as young as Kerkering can get on you. Doing that with the bases loaded, when you have not pitched with the bases loaded in over a year and your number one thing is you throw a slider that you don't always know where it's going, that's a very bad combo. However, he sneaks out of this inning against all odds.
Hayden
Smith grounds one to Bryce Harper and the Phillies survive, still up 5-3.
I will say this has been true. I've started to notice this as these games have gotten a lot closer, a lot tenser with these relievers. You can tell the pitch clock is fucking with them. Like, you can see them looking at it, which makes sense. Good. You know, we haven't had any huge violations in huge spots for the most part, which is good. But Real Muto talked about this after the game. In Matt Gelb's piece, he had a lot of good quotes about from Real Muto, just talking about how, like, yeah, like, first two games and most of this postseason, like, we've been ahead. We've been ahead literally in the game, and we've been getting ahead in counts. And we're getting behind, especially with young pitchers like Kerkering, but even with guys like Kimbrel, like, The pitch clock is speeding everything up and the pressure is so much on the pitcher. But hey, some pitchers are able to handle it and some pitchers are not. And if you want to blame the pitch clock, sorry, that's part of baseball now. And I think we all agree that it has been a good thing. And but I can tell, and that's what I was most excited about or most curious about for this postseason is how it would impact relievers. And I think we really have started to see that. But okay, but you're right. He does escape it. It could have been so much worse. We go to the top of the eighth. Phillies do not score. Kevin Ginkle's just awesome. I like Kevin Ginkle a lot. He's been really, really good. And now we go to bottom eight. Jake, take it away.
Craig Kimbrell, who is like driving an F1 supercar on hallucinogenic mushrooms, enters the game. Craig Kimbrell is so many things at the same time. He is one of the greatest closers in baseball history. He has 417 career regular season saves. He also inspires the opposite of confidence in October. And that is what happened yesterday. Lourdes Gurriel double down the line and left. Evan Longoria lines out to Brandon Marsh deep, and in comes Alec Thomas. One out, runner on second, and Thomas fights. Great at bat from him. Just a great at bat. Sixth pitch of it. Fastball off the plate away. Not a bad pitch from Kimbrell, to be clear. Thomas reaches out, gets it, drives it into the pool. 5-5. Holy shit.
So to the point about it not being a bad pitch, I was so delirious when the ball splashes down that, like, in my head, because Kimbrell's command is and control are both so bad, I was expecting to watch it. Like, it was all such chaos. And I was like, oh, he just laid it down the middle of Alec Thomas. But no. Now, he clearly wasn't trying to throw me through it, I don't think. I'd have to watch it back. At the same time, like, you know, Joe Davis, when Bryce Harper hit that home run last postseason, calling it the swing of his life, this is the swing of Alec Thomas's life. And not just because of the result. He has never hit a home run like this in the major leagues. Every single night that he's hit that many homers, they are all on pitches in, middle, up, down. Like, for him to be able to reach out and square this ball up to this degree is just a shocking, shocking result. Especially when all the pitches early in the at-bat were in. Maybe he's trying to speed him up away. Maybe he was ready for him to go away. Just an unbelievable piece of hitting. His third October homer. He had three homers for his last 61 regular season games. Alec Thomas. Let's talk about Alec Thomas here for a second. High draft pick, big time prospect. And Alec Thomas is a big reason why they were willing to trade Dalton Varsho. Because Dalton Varsho, while he had proven way more offensively, a lot of his value was he was just an amazing defensive center fielder, right? Defensive outfielder. And they had all these other guys like McCarthy, and obviously Carroll was going to play. When they trade for Gurriel and Moreno, they trade Varsho, it's because they believe in Alec Thomas. And so far in the regular season, Alec Thomas has not been a good hitter, but he has been an outstanding defensive center fielder. And they still believe, because of his track record in the minor leagues, the fact that he's still 23 years old, that there is offensive potential in there. And for him to deliver these three postseason homers already, who gives a shit what his OPS is in the regular season? And this is still such a talented guy who maybe he does develop into a great, big league hitter or even an average one. Because when your defense is that good, you just got to be competent. And this is a pinch hit, too. This is a pinch hit spot.
Another word on Kimbrell. Pitching 2 days in a row, you could see this here getting to him. I asked Matt Strom after the game, how does pitching 2 days in a row impact a reliever? And he said it's kind of different for everybody. Some people have issues with command. Some people have issues with stuff. Some it's a combination of the two. And for Kimbrell, it was both, but it would fluctuate between. His command on the Thomas at bat was pretty good. Like, he was spotting up where he wanted it to go, but his fastball just didn't have the same kind of zip and life to it. And that is why Thomas was able to take that pitch where he took that pitch. That's what's important.
That's a really good point. Because It was 94.
If that's 90, but it's not, it was 94 with less carry and ride. Like, if that pitch is 95, 96 with a little bit more zip on it, that's
foul
ball.
Fouls it back, right? Or misses it. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point.
That's a difference.
It's a really good point. Now, the game is tied. And this is where I think we need to turn the focus to Rob Thompson, in my opinion. Okay? Because Craig Kimbrell has now allowed a home run. The game is tied. And the Phillies have to keep playing the baseball game. Okay. And already they were in a spot where they clearly were trying to avoid Alvarado. They would show him in the bullpen moving around and then sitting down and then not throwing and then all these things.
It wasn't avoiding Alvarado. It was avoiding Alvarado for the eighth. Alvarado would have had the ninth. So what they were trying to do was give Alvarado the pocket of hitters at the top. Kimbrel's job was to get through the bottom of this lineup so that Alvarado could come in and face Carroll in the ninth. However, Alvarado was not hot and ready for when Carroll came up. So Kimbrel strikes out Perdomo, single to Ketel Marte, hits Corbin Carroll with a pitch, and the Phillies are like, ah, well, I guess we'll go to Alvarado here. Weird one. He comes in, faces Gabby Moreno, who's great against left-handed pitching. Moreno singles, run scores, up go the Diamondbacks.
Yes, and then... I mean, yeah, but I feel like Alvarado was warming. Again, you don't want to, like, I know this is such a difficult thing to literally manage. I don't know. It seems like the plan was if it stayed tied, like, again, Matt Gelb wrote about this. Like, it seemed like Lorenzen would have been the next guy at that point. I thought it seemed like Alvarado was ready or was clearly warming up a lot after Thomas homered. I don't know. Either way, having him face Carroll is just... Whatever. The problem is Kimbrel was terrible and they had to use him because of all those reasons that you mentioned before. Like, there was no great option. I guess you could have said that Alvarado should have been earlier, whatever. Moreno is the hero. They go to the top in the ninth. Marsh strikes out. Again, questionable umpiring there, but Seawald executing as he has the entire postseason. Jake Cave strikes out. Kyle Schwarber will not let the game end. He doubles down the line. And then Trey Turner swings through. Three fastballs, basically right down the middle. It was the perfect demonstration of what makes Paul Seawald so special because he is only throwing 92, 93. And it doesn't matter because with that release point, with the way that that ball essentially feels like it is not dipping at all, it is coming up at you, has so much ride, so much carry. Turner swings under three straight fastballs in the middle of the zone and... The D-backs win, and Paul Seawald has essentially been flawless. He has five saves, one win. He is not allowed a run. He's not allowed, I think he's allowed one walk, nine strikeouts. It was absolutely sensational. And again, the key to all of this, and this is kind of what I wrote about at Fox today, is that, like, this is why you have Seawald. Like, it's not just about helping your bullpen in the regular season. Like, the bullpen game really only works if you trust the guys at the very back half. Because if you're lucky enough to survive the first five, six, seven innings, you better be damn sure you're trusted who you're giving it to at the end of the game. And that was clearly not the case for the Phillies, and it clearly was the case for Arizona.
The Phillies bullpen has been outstanding so far this postseason. And part of the reason for that is because of how much length the starters had given them. And so the Phillies haven't really had to throw a lot of guys on multiple days or ask guys to go more than an inning. That hasn't been necessary, and this was really the first time they had to lean on their bullpen, and the bullpen looked a little bit exhausted. Alvarado, understandably wiped,
yes,
after throwing two innings the day before. Mm-hmm. It is a key point as we enter. Let's flip this forward for tonight's game: Zach Gallen against Zach Wheeler, and another ace off. Both of these guys will be asked to give their team's length. In an era where pitchers are throwing shorter outings than ever before, this is an opportunity for a little throwback action because both of these bullpens are exhausted and taxed. Not everyone will be available today. I would be shocked if Kimbrel pitches.
I would say the only ones I would say are like no shot are Kimbrel and Kirkering. I think Alvarado hasn't thrown that many pitches. I don't know if he's gone 3 days in a row at any point in the season. I know Kirkering hadn't gone back-to-back days until last night.
Yeah.
But still, they're going to ask for length. And what's interesting here, when you're comparing Gallen and Wheeler, is we've seen Gallen struggle early and correct and still get through a lot of the game. Whereas Wheeler has just mowed everybody down for the first five innings and then has started to struggle in the sixth and seventh. But what is going to be fascinating is to see, I have to imagine that both managers, even if these guys get tagged a little bit in the early going, are going to be, especially since this is not, an elimination game for either team, they need to not completely ruin their own bullpen. they're going to hope that both these guys get through six innings essentially no matter what.
The two guys, I guess there are really three guys for Arizona who have thrown a lot of pitches. Sewald threw 21 in game three and then 22 last night. So you have to think he's available.
Yeah, I'm going to check if he's gone 3 days in a row, but yeah.
Expect a potentially diminished Sewald going 3 days in a row. Ryan Thompson, 11 on Thursday, 23 yesterday. Saul Frank, who does not look good and I don't think will be throwing in high lev, 15 on Thursday, 25 yesterday. So those, I think we're going to see a lot of Miguel Castro tonight in a big spot would be my guess. Ginkel only threw 12 yesterday. He'll go again. But it's going to come down to that because I think both of these pitchers, the starters, will be pretty good. Maybe this is unfair. I would put Wheeler in a category above Gallen. I like Zach Gallen. I think the way that he's pitching right now, there are legitimate questions mechanically about his fastball command and the amount of mistakes he made in the zone in game one was indicative of a trend that had kind of been happening to him a little bit with the fastball and the cutter. Maybe that's fixed tonight. Maybe not. However, Wheeler has been such a monster through the first five innings. I just can't see the Diamondbacks touching him. However, I didn't see the Diamondbacks winning either the last two nights. So what the fuck do I know? This team is remarkable. They have irrational confidence. They have the momentum in their corner. The Phillies have looked just out of sorts the last two games. They need some sort of catalyst to get them back on the right track. But this series is on, man. Like, I am incredibly impressed by the fortitude from the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, yeah. And ultimately, these three games in a row is, with the Phillies team right now, is probably an off day, which they will get on Sunday, but they might be down 3-2, so we'll see.
The one X factor tonight out of the bullpen for the Phillies is Ranger Suarez. Ranger Suarez, their three starter, who started game three, worked a ton out of the bullpen last postseason and was dynamite in relief. He has not done that yet this year. The Phillies have not needed him to do that. Doing it after he threw on game three might be a little risky. I would not be shocked to see him down in the bullpen and be used for a pocket of lefties at some point in this game.
Yeah, and I think Gelb wrote that too. I mean, is that compromising his availability for game seven? Who knows? But yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be something. This is going to be something, and I'm glad because I mean, last night, especially with after the Rangers Astros game, like in the first six innings of this one, it was like, all right, like kind of catch your breath, kind of move forward. It's like, all right, Phillies are in control, and then it just, I mean, it flips so fast. But that's what this D-backs team have done, and as those beautiful signs say, snakes alive, snakes. Very much alive. All right, Jake, let's end this podcast. Thank you all for listening. We probably will not be recording tonight or tomorrow after game five. Jake, of course, has to travel back to the East Coast. So we might delay our next pod until Monday when we will be reacting to game five and Astros Rangers game six. So we appreciate your patience, but hopefully everyone enjoyed this Saturday edition of Baseball Barbercast. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Rate and review the pod wherever you get it. We really appreciate the support. Hope you enjoyed the Saturday pod. This was, I mean, what were we going to not podcast after two of the greatest postseason games you've ever seen? Probably not. Jake Mintz, hope you can stay cool in the desert, not desert. Thank you, Chris Tyler, for producing this podcast on a Saturday. And we will talk to you all very soon. Thank you for listening.
SiriusXM Podcasts.